Gowers spoke of the susceptibility of pianists and violinists to their own occupation neuroses. Other provocative occupations included those of painters, harpists, artificial flower makers, turners, watchmakers, knitters, engravers, masons, compositors, enamelers, cigarette makers, shoemakers, milkers, money counters, and zither players, a veritable tally of Victorian occupations. Gowers did not see these task-specific problems as benign. The disease, when well developed, is one in which the prognosis is always uncertain and often unfavourable. Interestingly, at a time when such symptoms were either ascribed to peripheral problems with muscles, tendons, or nerves, or seen as hysterical or mental, Gowers did not feel satisfied with either explanation, though he allowed that these factors could play a subsidiary role. He insisted, rather, that these occupational neuroses had an origin in the brain. One reason for this thought was the fact that, though different parts of the body could be afflicted, all the provocative occupations involved rapid, repetitive movements of small muscles. Another was the conjunction of inhibitory features, such as unresponsiveness or paralysis, with excitatory ones, abnormal movements or spasms, which increased the more one fought against the inhibition. These considerations disposed Gowers to see occupation neuroses as disorders of motor control in the brain, disorders he thought might involve the motor cortex. The functions of the basal ganglia were unknown at this time. Once occupation neuroses developed, there was little chance of continuing in the same occupation or profession. But despite the mysterious nature and crippling consequences of this condition, remarkably little attention was paid to it medically for almost a century. Though it was well known in the world of performing musicians that this dread condition could lie in wait for anyone, perhaps 1 in 100 musicians would be affected at some point in their career, a natural reserve, even secrecy, prevailed. To acknowledge an occupation-related cramp was close to professional suicide. It would be understood that one would have to give up performing and become a teacher, a conductor, perhaps a composer instead. Richard J. Lederman of the Cleveland Clinic has proposed that this may be what happened to Schumann, who developed a strange hand condition in his pianistic days, which, in desperation, he attempted to treat himself, and perhaps rendered irreparable by the use of a finger-stretching device. Not until the 1980s was this veil of secrecy finally torn away, with great courage, by two virtuoso pianists, Gary Graffman and Leon Fleischer. Their stories were remarkably similar. Fleischer, like Graffman, had been a child prodigy and one of the preeminent pianists in the world from his teenage years. In 1963, at the age of 36, he found the fourth and fifth fingers of his right hand starting to curl under his hand when he played. Fleischer fought against this and continued to play, but the more he fought, the worse the spasm became. A year later, he was forced to give up performing. In 1981, in an interview with Jennifer Dunning in the New York Times, Fleischer gave a precise and graphic description of the problems that had put a stop to his performance, including the years of misdiagnosis and sometimes mistreatment he had received. Not the least of his problems when seeking treatment was not being believed, for his symptoms came on only with piano playing, and very few doctors had a piano in their office. Fleischer's public acknowledgement of his condition came soon after Graffman acknowledged his own problem in 1981, and this spurred other musicians to admit that they, too, had been having similar problems. It also stimulated the first medical and scientific attention to the problem in almost a century.